This is a production of Cornell University.
UA meeting, December 2nd, 2009.
Please grab call for approval of the minutes of the October 28th meeting.
I move the minutes to approve. Second.
I hear a motion and a second. There was a correction that I got by email from somebody.
John, who can't be here. I move with that correction. Seems like John. That was the reason.
It seemed a minor change to me.
I read it.
Is the seconder approve?
I moved them. Ellis
is seconded. And now I guess the question is, all in favor?
Aye.
Controversial. Wonderful. Okay, the Employee Assembly Caucus for an Executive Member.
None here.
And yet, nobody is here.
Nobody's here. Well, then they're going to have a tough time caucusing.
Yeah. Leon seems to be the only active member on the Employee Assembly who is...
They do have two formally seated members. I sent the...
Kelly. Yeah. Kelly is formally seated?
Yeah. At least online.
You will be late.
But Kelly is not going to be here, so there's only one person that's going to be here of the two.
Yeah, but he still has to be present, right, to vote for himself.
If we could take this opportunity to suggest that we have extend an effort to the Employee Assembly to appoint new members.
So I sent an email after the last exec meeting and did request for them to appoint new members. I haven't heard anything back. I don't know if the Office of Assemblies has heard anything back.
Yeah, I guess we could be a little bit more welcoming in the sense of going to people and speaking personally to them. That sometimes works better than just an email.
Okay.
At least it's worked for the Faculty Senate in the past.
I will see what I can do about encouraging.
Randy says that James Blair has come back as an employee. He's retired as a faculty member, and he was quite active in the assembly. One might suggest that name to the Employee Assembly.
Okay. The next issue, and we are moving along with astonishing speed and rapidity, is to elect a new vice chair. As you know, Rodney has resigned, and so I have become, according to the bylaws, chair, and so we need a new vice. And are there any nominations for this exalted position?
I nominate Ed Strong.
You get to speak first.
I second.
Are there other nominations? Then, that being the case, I suggest we have one nomination and that we vote. This, of course, I suppose you should hide your head.
By acclamation.
Excellent.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Ed.
Thank you.
That's great. All right, we have now progressed to the business of the day, which was open discussion with President Skorton, but we've made such progress that it seems to me much more useful to simply proceed ahead here and try and gain some ground. And the next thing on our agenda is committee updates, including the timeline of the Charter Review Committee. And... do you want to talk about that?
I think Kate probably could talk the most about the charter review.
Last Wednesday we had a charter review meeting. Not very many people who expressed interest can make it, which is one of the things we want to try and solve for the future meetings. There were 11 people that originally expressed interest in being involved. I want to clear the exact timeline. We have a timeline set up through the e-board, but I wanted to have the e-board vote on it before we send it out. We have a timeline set up through February of all the meetings, so members can in advance plan their schedules and make time accordingly. And this would include for everyone to be involved. I think Andrew Brockman brought up a good point last week how everyone who wants to should be involved. And so take that into account. We decide going with the same idea that small groups are the best. Everyone should be involved. So after we discussed it, we're going to do the constituency method. According to the timeline, each constituency will have a week and a half to meet. And it's a lot easier to plan four schedules or the schedules of five members versus 11 or 12. Once the constituencies meet, they'll review a specific amount of articles. And then they'll, from there, each e-board member will take it to the executive committee and then we'll discuss what each constituency thought was important. So far at the last meeting, we discussed articles 1 and 2, and we just went through them line by line and discussed what needs to be changed, and that's the method that I propose that we follow. Instead of just a holistic view of what needs to be changed, we need to go through and make concrete changes. The exact schedule for the weeks, I want to review with Charlie and Ed before it gets sent out, but does anyone have any objections to that basic idea?
Yeah, I think the idea here is that, I mean, it's much more easier for a week and a half for many people to meet in that window and tell your exec member. So, and the changes as they progress will be made available online. Ari is offered to make those publicly.
Oh, that's great. Good. Any more about the charter review? Are there any reports from other committees?
I'll mention, so TAC has met twice now. Transportation.
Thank you.
And at the first meeting, they received basically the rules and regulations of transportation, and then there was some discussion about the ongoing problem of broken parking meters on campus, and transportation is looking into fixing. It's a system-wide problem with the style of meters, so those will be replaced eventually. The second meeting, we got a presentation from TCAT. TCAT on, I believe the date is actually January 17th, will be changing their schedules as per their system-wide review that they did. And this is going to better accommodate campus both into locations for students, faculty, and staff, but also better use of time, especially in the late night. We know there's been some issues with violence on and off campus in the evening, and so they're going to more stagger the late night routes, so that's better accommodating. And so TAC is up and running, and I think we're going to look at some policy things in the future, so see exactly use TAC as TAC is intended to be used and see how that goes along. So if anybody has any policy issues, mention those to me or your exec board member.
Are there other reports from other committees?
I didn't go to campus planning. Leon went for me.
Did you learn anything from Leon?
No,
so what happened?
We talked about other things that he gets to.
Okay. Very good. Okay. Well, I think that what we should do, we have 20 minutes before the president gets here. I think we should start, Marty, with your resolution and see how far we get.
Thank you very much. The University Sustainability Committee met in two shifts to consider the resolution and the suggestions that were made at the last UA meeting, and we came up with an alternative resolution which we have before you now. There's a couple of extra copies here, and you're welcome to take them to look at it. I hope you've considered them already. There were a couple of comments made by different representatives, and Leon's and both were all comments that were received were included, and I so the resolution is as it was presented to you with those black sections being the inclusion of comments that came from the representatives. I'd like to move this resolution.
Is there a second?
Okay.
Thank you, Randy. The resolution is open for discussion.
comments, questions?
Yes.
I think these are really good corrections. I think it goes a lot better than last time. I'm just wondering, just a question. Is Cornell currently leasing any of this land?
We are. I think we're, yeah. We understand that they are not yet.
So
are they considering it? Mm-hmm.
We understand that they are. That is, they have been in negotiations to consider.
So I actually just brought in a copy of the Sun from today, and so this struck me as interesting. It's Sun reporting, so the final paragraph of the article that talks about student protest in Hope Plaza says that currently the university has not signed any contracts and is not considering leases, according to Simeon Moss, deputy spokesperson.
Fine.
So I didn't know if this is in error, or if we have any further insight into this.
What I said was that has it considered, I think was the question.
Yeah.
I said that my understanding was that it had.
Okay.
So if you're looking at the difference in tense between considering and having had considered, then my answer was that it had considered, not that it is currently considered.
Sounds like the definitely difference mm-hmm. currently is.
Any other questions about these?
Do we know if the university has internally any committees with, say, experts in engineering or in any of these issues already up and running?
The rumor is that there is there are people who are consulted by the real estate department.
So this is a proposal to change rumor into transparent.
This is a proposal to make transparent processes of considering leasing of Cornell and across the campus and in the community. Processes of discovery of information, research, and of negotiation prospects.
Are there other comments?
Any interesting comment?
Mm-hmm.
How
does this compare? I know as chair I should be quiet, but I can't resist. How does this compare to the resolution that you're proposing for the Faculty Senate?
It's very similar.
It seemed to me it was almost identical.
It's almost identical. I mean, the wording is different.
I have a copy of yours, and we could read that. I think it's nice to have a different version, slightly different, coming out of us. And frankly, we've worked on this. You know, we had in front of us last week a resolution that was almost identical to the Senate resolution that was tabled, and we responded to it as a body. We amended it, and we actually came up with a substantially different resolution. And the Senate process is now went in a similar direction to craft a different resolution based upon objections and caucuses with members and discussions with members. And so I'm perfectly happy to have this. I'm hoping that we'll move.
And what's the status of the faculty resolution to the Senate?
The two guests here are Lynn Nicholson, who is one of the sponsors of the Senate resolution, biologist in microbiology.
In molecular biology and genetics.
And genetics, yes. And
Robert Oswald, in molecular medicine.
Molecular medicine. And they can speak to that.
Sure. So I submitted the Senate resolution as of noon today to the Dean of Faculty, Bill Frye. And the senators will receive a copy of this to review in the next week, and then we will meet a week from today, and it will come to the floor of the Senate and be discussed, and hopefully we'll come to a vote.
Is there any other discussion?
I'm just wondering all of the Rosella Shale discussion has been calm, very little growth.
Well, we had a session yesterday, which was considerably, it was quite long, 2 hours long, where it was divided up. It was an informational session that was developed by the Senate and the Dean of Faculty's office to come to to just that point, and yeah. there were to speak to just that point, and there were a couple hundred people, I would say, right? Maybe 200, 250 people, their faculty, with four faculty and staff, and they were there and asked a number of questions. So it's been thoroughly vetted, and you're right, it's embedded in many circles in the community and so forth, and it seems to be the appropriate time for the university legislative and community bodies to put something forth of this sort, it seems to
me. Yeah, I agree with that. I just wonder if there are any pros.
Well,
there
are
any cons. I haven't heard any pros, especially economic stuff.
If I could just interject here for just a moment. The geologists and people in earth and atmospheric science, this is their bread and butter. I mean, they yeah. they have very synergistic connections with the gas industry. They are not pro or con at this point because they don't have enough information. And that's really the focus, I think, of your resolution as well as our resolution. We need more information. It's going too fast. And we just basically need to fill in the blanks so that we understand what the impact is and where it has been applied elsewhere in the country, and then make a logical decision. So it's not saying never. It's just basically saying wait. And everybody, it seems, in earth and atmospheric science does agree that it's going too fast and we do need to be cautious.
Elizabeth.
I have a question for all of you, please. I have a friend in another college who sends me alarmed emails to out of the state right now, but about what's happening there, and she thinks that a lot of people in Arizona are going to find these leases. Does that mean that nothing can be done to stop drilling there? I don't understand the legal state of
I believe we want to stay on the passage of the resolution. And those
I guess we're just getting at efficacy. Whether we will be able to stop drilling around here, which I believe that they're interested in doing, if so many people have already leased.
Well, Elizabeth, I think that's a good point, but I don't think that's germane to the resolution at hand. And I think hopefully we'll have some time to talk about this later, but I'd like to deal with the resolution and get that either approved
yeah.
or not.
Because, that kind of issue is a very important one, and it's one that we are all working on. You're working on it separately. But this resolution isn't designed to speak to that at all. It's designed, in fact, yeah. So if we could just get this through the body, then we can have those discussions and maybe come up with some other actions possibly that need to be discussed along those lines.
So, other discussion about on the topic of the resolution. Are you ready to vote? All right, all in favor, put up your hand. And all opposed. I would say it was unanimous. And so,
thank you very much. We should put this together and send it on.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. And it seems to me a clear statement.
Yeah, thanks. I think the improvements are really nice.
You know how fast we're moving.
Yeah, well, I don't mean to rush people here, but I would like to get things done for the president. Randy, do you want to talk about your resolution? We may not
sure.
finish the discussion, but at least we could start it.
There's a change in the biology curriculum that's taking place, and I would say the majority of biologists, the students, faculty, their employees, are unaware of what's taking place. And this is a resolution to say that we should be aware. In fact, it was wrong for us not to be aware, but really said we should be aware.
There's a procedural point which I think is kind of interesting, and maybe you'd like to talk about it, Randy. It would seem to me ideally this would be a resolution that would come through the Faculty Senate, which is the academic side of the governance structure, and yet here we are in the University Assembly offering this suggestion.
And you have read the charter and has. I thought you might wish to comment on that.
So I was at the charter review meeting because I lent my car to somebody, so I couldn't go where I was going to go. I noticed that the charter says that Article 1.6 says the University Assembly may make recommendations to the university faculty or the respective college faculties in academic matters of concern to the university. I think that's a wonderful, wonderful power. Whereas according to bylaw 1.6A, academic matters may include curriculum. There was something else, maybe somebody remembers, and tenure policy. So I thought, had I known this years ago, before the whole curriculum task force was instituted, and it was initially instituted in some parallel universe around biology, and I would have brought this up, but because I just became aware of this power that we have, that's why I'm bringing it up now.
Okay, so the resolution is on the table. Is there a second? Okay, we have a second. Andrew is willing to second it. Is there any discussion, Elizabeth?
I know nothing. I feel like Sergeant Schultz. I know nothing. I can't tell you. We haven't been informed.
The background of this, Randy, is that you are an instructor in these. Or you're a teacher, professor in this kind of course. And have you talked with
Charlie too?
Yeah.
Have been.
Me too.
Right.
Has there been any discussions with anybody that was part of the curriculum transition committee?
I would say, as the chair in biology, and I've been witnessing what's been happening for the past two or three years, actually starting in 2006 when Susan Henry demanded that biology curriculum be changed, more or less. And a task force was convened, and they met for 2 years, and they made recommendations to two deans, one Dean Henry of Cal's and Peter LaPage in the Arts College, that chair biology teaching. And this task force committee is fully available, that report is available. And the appendix to that actually recommended actions be taken by a committee that has now been formed, which is the transition committee. The biology curriculum transition committee was more or less mandated in that report. And that is available. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah, well, that report's available. But
and that dates back to 2008. And now that committee has been meeting for about a year, and they finally, I have to say, the bio chairs have been very upset, like Randy has been, because we've been almost totally in the dark about exactly what they're recommending. And they finally, in the last month, made presentations to the chairs of Cal. I don't know about the Arts College, but certainly to the chairs who are involved in biology, a kind of a tentative report that they put together. And I'd recommend that if we really are interested in hearing about it, that we just invite Ron Hoy, who is the chair of that committee. He'd be happy to come explain it all if we wanted to.
I think it should be open to all biologists, all students.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a very diverse group of people that want to take an introductory biology course that aren't bio majors, people that
I agree, Randy, that the transparency issue is vital here, that we should know about it. But in defense of the committee and the way Ron has been operating, you know, biology has several factions that don't always agree with each other.
How delicately put.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's been huge discussion going on and a moving target. I mean, the reason that Ron Troy hasn't allowed even the biology chairs to know all the details, is that he's managing a lot of discussion. And I think he's done a good job of it, actually. And I think they have settled now on a plan just in the last month or so that we presented. It's still tentative, and some of the recommendations of the task force have already been implemented. In other words, some of the new courses that are already in place. The biology course that we all know and love, Bio 101 to 104, the bio majors course, it's gone. As of next fall, you won't have that course. There'll be a Chinese menu sort of three courses that you can select two from, and an integrative biological laboratory course that was proposed originally by the task force.
But only one semester now.
Yeah, and the details, the devil is always in the details, so the details are still being worked out. There are several departments involved in planning and new courses. Moving target right now.
LSU in biology field as well.
And I'm actually teaching one of the courses.
One, two, three, four biologists.
More
than one year in the biology related. We have a lot of biology power around here. I guess I feel, though, that you folks should be having vigorous discussions amongst yourselves and with the wider group. And I don't know that
the way the committee has worked.
I understand, and I've got a feel for that from what George said, but I don't know that we could be helpful as a group, unless undergraduates wanted to jump in. And if you're a biology major or taking biology 101 or 104,
I've taken it with this guy right here.
Okay, and wanted to say this is really an issue that's a burning issue for undergraduates as well, and the forum such as the UA presents where
there is some concern for undergraduates who are not necessarily on a med school track. I mean, the MCAT, Randy correctly points out
that they're considering
teaching the biology courses to make sure that the MCAT is covered. I don't think it's fair to say that they're teaching for the test, though. Really. I think they're teaching the idea is much broader than the whole curriculum will be much broader than that. But that's definitely on the agenda, so it's worth undergraduate consideration if you're interested in biology.
We have a minute left, maybe, until the president comes. And what I suggest about this is it's a resolution pregnant with implications and with possibilities, but I don't know that. I wonder whether we could put this for our early in the fall, in the spring meeting, and in the meantime, have some kinds of discussions amongst the biology heavyweights in here, and contribute. Maybe even the undergraduates and graduate students can contribute to a forum in the UA email group that could look at, because I would vote against this if it was brought up now, because I don't feel like I can follow up on it, I guess.
I think that that Brian Hoy's group should be having the forum. They're the people that are responsible. They're the people that should be educating everybody.
If I could step aside, I'm sorry.
I was just actually on the same point of both what you guys brought up. When we were reviewing the charter, I believe there's a portion there that says that the university assembly can call for a forum of the university or a specific department if we wish.
That's exactly what I
mean. At this point, we don't know if the people that have the information would even volunteer to come.
Let's
make out of
it.
That's good.
Why don't you just contact
me?
Or you?
That's fine.
If you're willing to have a conversation with the president and our distinguished vice president for university communications.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, welcome.
Thanks, everybody.
Do you want to go around the room, or do you know everybody?
That'd be great. I know the students, I know some of the faculty, but I'd love to hear. I don't recognize you, actually, but.
No. Elizabeth, do you want to start?
Elizabeth Sanders, Government Department.
Good to see you. Hope you had a good holiday.
Hi, I'm just the clerk.
But
I'm young.
I'm David. Nice to see you.
Thank you.
Amy O'Donnell
from the
Assembly's
Office.
Andrew Brockman, ILR.
I'm Bill Giorsi, Microbiology.
Good to see you.
Ellis Loeb, Medical Sciences.
How are you?
Get laid in the A.
Charlie Walker, retired.
Ed Stone, you just met last night.
Good bless me.
Adam Nicoletti, Kane.
Andy Wayne, Microbiology.
Already had music. Good to see you, boss.
I'm just your boss.
Last night we had 2 hours of meetings with the students at various office hours, and then the student leaders and the 2 student elected trustees were there. I really know how to make you sweat.
And you know the people off in the corner?
I do, but it's good to see you, even though I know you. Nice to see you. So, a pleasure to see everybody. I'm spending a lot of time, as I know you are, thinking about the future of the university. And almost all the conversation in those 2 hours with the students yesterday was about that, both the student leaders meeting and also, it's interesting, at the office hours where Susan Murphy and I just set up a thing where first come, first serves, just like faculty office hours, really. People can come in and talk, and it's very interesting, predominantly undergraduates, not entirely, but predominantly undergraduates, obviously have a big interest in the planning that's going on, and they express those interests very clearly. So I can't get enough time with the 30,000, as I call them, as opposed to the 30. There's 30 people I interact with all the time, the deans and the vice presidents and so on. And there's the 30,000, which is the actual university. So I appreciate more time with the 30,000. And it's not that Charlie is part of the 30,000, not part of the 30, which he was in the dean of faculty. It's good to do that. So spending a lot of time thinking about the future. And the other issue that I'm thinking about a lot, which I hope and assume is something that you all are talking about, I know it's something that Elizabeth and others have thought a lot about, and that is the process of shared governance. We're so focused, I am anyway, focused on the actual product right now. You know, what kind of decisions, what will the quality of the decisions be, how will they affect the campus today, tomorrow, 10 years from now. But it's a very important time for us to continue to focus on the process that we're going through. And I've been hugely grateful to Tommy for everything he's done to help bring the process as much into the sunshine as it can possibly be. At least it looks that way to me. And also to Kent Fox and Tommy together, for example, for putting all the task forces out online. And so I hope, in whatever else you'd like to talk about today, because it's your agenda, I'd love to hear what you think about the process. And I have heard from some unsolicited, but now I'm soliciting your feedback on it, as well as the outcome. So, thanks, and I'm all yours, whatever you want to talk about.
Well,
or who's going to call him?
I think that Dave said transparency has been good. I've been around Cornell for quite a long time, and I've seen a lot of decisions made behind closed doors. I'm chair of a department, and yesterday we had a really good meeting with the provost, in which even though the budget information is so confusing, I now know why it was so obfuscated in the past, because it's too hard to explain it all. But I just have to say, and a lot of chairs sitting around that room were very happy with that, even though we know the news is bad and it could get worse, and the budget cuts seem like they're going to kill some good things, perhaps. The process seems okay to me, in fact, very, very good.
I'm glad to hear it. Elizabeth, I'd love to hear what you think, because you've been a very helpful commentator on that to me in the past.
I was just going to ask about the CAPS reports being online. That's just a summary. The Faculty Senate resolution, I think the spirit of it was that those CAPS reports would be made more available than being in Day Hall. And I don't know, I haven't gone to reading there because I can't imagine how it works to go in an office and check them out. But if somebody else is there at the same time, I had really hoped, and I do think that the Senate, in passing the resolution, thought that maybe all the reports would be online, or they all would be made available. And I suggested in one forum that they be shared at least at the department level, the real the ones that we're most interested in. We may not care as much about the task force reports in our physical sciences, but we care about arts and sciences. And if those could be made available in the chair's office, we have a process in my department now when we do tenure reviews, and that is you can't take the folder full of outside letters to your office. You have to sit in the office and look at them. And so we might do the same thing with the task force reports.
One issue that came up, and you'll understand this, I'm sure, is that when the people were asked to put the task force report together some time ago, they weren't told that they would be public.
But they weren't told they wouldn't, were they? Wouldn't they have assumed
it? I don't think in a private university. In fact, if I can tell you the truth, having been 28 of my 31 years in higher education at public universities, there the rebuttable assumption, of course, is that everything is open with sunshine. And that just hasn't been the case at private universities anywhere in the country. I'm not saying it shouldn't be. I'm not arguing that. But I think the assumption for those kind of things where the provost has said, and please, I'm not defending keeping them for anybody. They're out there because we all agree they should be out there, the summaries. But I think when the people were asked to do them, they were asked to be to think as broadly and unbridled way as possible. What would you do if you had it with just a 15% reduced revenue? And so I think what he did was go back and take the summary of the actual things that were put forward and sent them out there. So I believe that Ken feels he has abided with the spirit of the resolution.
But he did tell the Senate last time that he had taken each task force report back to the task force and said, is there anything you'd like to redact? And that they did take things out that they didn't want to be public. But so that leaves them now rather sanitized with respect to things that people are uneasy about becoming public. So
even
again,
though
the
actual suggestions for what to do are in there and they're all public, it's the sort of background material and stuff that you're
talking
about.
I think that would be helpful. Okay. I think a lot of people in our department would. Plus, it's the inconvenience of going to Day Hall. If you know they're in the department office, you're all accustomed to going down there and reading confidential things because that's the practice in our department. And that would just, you know, going down the hall is so much easier than coming over to Day Hall.
Tell me, I'm hearing you, I'm not arguing with you. Tell me one more time, though. Since the recommendations for change are online, and that's the operative part of the report, what is it about the other part?
Because they're very much rooted in how we see the problem and how we see the goals. And I think he would like to understand the thinking that goes into the recommendations.
So what's problem for formulation?
I just can't think of a good reason for us all not to be a part of that. And it may be more transparency now. I'm sure, I think it is, which is my own living experience here, more transparent than before. But still, you know, if we'd had more transparency and participation before the financial crisis, we might not have had a financial crisis, which is always my argument. Yeah. So,
possibly.
You know, better late than never, but I think deliberation just leads to better decisions.
Yeah. I just as an editorial note, I agree in general with exactly what you said. I think the kind of deliberation that goes on at most universities, which is at the departmental level or at the collegiate level and not at the university-wide level, does not necessarily lead to better decisions at the university-wide level.
Well, that's an empirical question. We take a lot of data. But, you know, there are schools
example,
that have more participation needed.
Yeah, for example, if every college gets to have one construction project but the university can't afford the debt service on all of them, somebody has to decide what goes forward and what doesn't.
Okay.
And so,
and maybe that should be broadly vetted because, as we know,
I
didn't
think
happen that way.
No, I think it should be, which is why the data are out there now. I agree.
And we are in more trouble, I think. You have a better experience, certainly better view of this than I do, but just from visiting other schools, I think we're in more trouble than most of the Ivies. We can't hire, we're making more devastating cuts, and really very sad what's happening to this university, and it's very sad that it happened perhaps because of autocratic decisions that were made without much participation that got us into huge buildings, a real, you know, a sort of orgy of building rather than an emphasis on things that counted more.
You've heard me many times in public say that I want to spend money on people, not buildings. You know, I'm with you on that. It's not true that we're stopping the other right. It's just not true. Harvard, they stopped serving hot breakfast at the dorms. Many of the other places are hiring no faculty. I know about the Modern Language Association. I follow that stuff very closely. We are still hiring faculty, even in arts and sciences. And other places are doing even more draconian things. All the Ivies are in big trouble now. Some of the Harvard individual colleges are 80% in endowment earnings. 80%. We're 11% in endowment earnings. So I think the big difference between here and the other schools is that we're trying to balance the budget for the long term, you know, as opposed to just borrow more money and get through a short period of time. But I hope you'll allow me to talk to groups. I hope word doesn't get out on campus if there's any evidence suggesting that we're worse off than the other Ivy. That's just not accurate.
And just really going by what Peter LePage told us at the college meeting, and he did say that. He said, look, our peer institutions are hiring. We went through field by field.
Yeah. Some aren't. And we are hiring. And you're hiring. Arts and Science is hiring right now. I understand. But that's one department. Believe me, I'm not arguing about that.
Are there other questions, comments?
Appreciate it.
Thoughts around the table? Yes,
Andrew. Would you be willing to send out an email to the Cornell community detailing, well, just summarizing the core cuts?
I'm not following what you're asking for.
Well, you are currently listing, you know, the task force, their recommendations. Would you be willing to summarize the biggest changes and send that out in an email to the Cornell community?
When will we decide what to do, you mean?
Right, when you're up to that stage.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. And many stages are on the way. Yeah, but even though we haven't putting stuff out, absolutely, absolutely. I'd like to remind you about the three different things that are going on now, because they're all important to keep your eye on. One are the task force reports, which are important, but very important. But to put them in context, they were the result of a request of the provost to the different colleges and vice presidential units. How would you manage on 15% less revenue if that actually stayed the case? Secondly, are the decisions that we're in the process of working on right this minute in the non-academic side of the university, things like the procurement system, things that will affect everybody in the university but don't touch curriculum or research. And we have just this morning kicked off the next phase of all that work on administrative costs. The only firm decisions that have been made, we announced immediately. That was me eliminating two vice presidencies, shrinking my office, and doing some other things. Anything else that comes up in final decision, of course, you'll hear about it. And Tommy has tried, if not every week, at least twice a month, to put things out about the status of things that even haven't been decided yet. And I know that when we decided to go after the procurement money, for example, he rolled that out immediately. So yes, we will do that as they come out. And also, if you think it's helpful, Andrew, to summarize them, it's a good suggestion.
Absolutely.
We'll summarize them periodically. Say, here's a new thing. Please remember these other six things that asked before. The third thing is the faculty group that's actually developing a strategic plan. And this by far is the most significant thing, because most universities do not have strategic plans for a very good reason. And that is that the students come to the university to study in particular areas. Even if students come in there undecided, as I was, for example, until I was a junior, eventually you end up getting a degree in a certain discipline. And the research is done in disciplines, and the curricular development is done in disciplines or between disciplines. And so it's much more logical in general to have planning done at the local level, at the disciplinary level, in universities or department level. But because of the exchange that Elizabeth and I just had, some decisions have to be made at a level that takes into account the input from all these different levels and decide, for example, Are we in an era now where we just have to de-emphasize large construction projects? Are we in an era where we have to emphasize putting more money in faculty hiring? Are we in an era where we have to emphasize undergraduate need-based financial aid? These are things that the university has to come together on. Cannot be top-down, except in me insisting that we come to some decisions about what they are collectively. And that group, which is headed by Lawler, Ed Lawler, and has, I think, 8 faculty altogether, if I have the number right, 1 from Weill Cornell, 7 from here, or is it 9, 1 and 8? Anyway.
8 plus Lawler.
Okay. So 7 faculty from here, 1 from the medical school, and Ed. They're going to write the plan. And a lot of input, they're going to get a lot of input from around the campus. And there's a more than critical, it's a do or die, it comes up with thumbs down example of shared governance, but that is a faculty-led effort. It has to take into account the interests of students and staff. It'll be the very, very most important source of decisions that have to affect large changes in the way expenditures are made, not day-to-day expenditures, which of course are made at the departmental level, but you know, general size of things and what we decide to emphasize have to come from that strategic plan. And that's I wouldn't say anathema, that would be dramatic, but it's very much countercultural to universities to have any sort of joint strategic plan. And we just have to have one now.
I've been interested in the past few years in the nature of shared governance,
yeah,
on the campus. Particularly recently, in what is the relationship between the legislative body, the Senate, the faculty senate, the UA, and the executive body here? Obviously, it's different from the U.S. situation, Congress situation, but I like to think that there's some more than just advisory roles that both those bodies play.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in the past couple of years there's been more, as a consequence of your interest in listening, or interest in empowering, one could say, more of a role that we've taken, we have the right to take. But I'm still not certain. I mean, I hear, for example, somebody's saying from the Senate, well, I'm on the Senate, but we don't do very much, you know, kind of thing. And I occasionally come away from the UA meetings or resolutions of the past and send on to you thinking, well, we passed that resolution, but we're not getting anywhere. So I'm you know, those are obviously periods you go through that your moods change. I keep coming back here, and I know senators keep coming back to the Senate. I'm wondering what you can, from your experience in other executive situations at other universities, and what you can imagine we might do to have even more feeling of empowerment. I have a couple of specific things in mind, but I'll ask you that question first. What roles might we take on with more vigor and more? I'll speak just for the UA. Obviously, we're doing a charter revision now. And my thought in the charter, about the charter revision, is why don't we decide what it is we want to do before we decide how we could revise the charter, you know, to meet that, what we want to do. But I'm not certain that we can revise it, say, what we want to do until we get a better feeling for what it is we'll be allowed, I guess.
Yeah, sure. But no, it's the thing I brought up earlier, Maddie, it's the core question of shared governance. I've always seen it, perhaps simplistically, but in the 24 years I've been doing high-level administration, I've always seen it the same way from day one. The first thing is that there will be occasional decisions by the executive of the organization, any nonprofit, that just have to be made, and it's disingenuous to pretend there's going to be input into regulatory things, for example. You could argue all day long, well, the faculty who do animal research should be allowed to decide whether they have mandatory training in the conduct of animal research or what. But eventually it's going to happen because that's a regulatory environment. So I've always felt that in a few percentage of cases, 5%, 1%, something like that. With disingenuous to pretend you're going to take, we're all going to sit around and figure it out together, you're just going to do it, and that's just not the way it is. And I liken most examples to the regulatory world. Except for those few, relatively few things, Marty, where I think they're just as responsibility to make sure that the university stays on the right side of the line.
Yeah.
Except for that, I think everything else should be up for broad discussion. Broad is the operative and confusing word. As you know, I like to have town hall type meetings with
right.
people. And I go to some meetings and there's 500 people there. I go to some meetings and there's 8 people. No. Why are those variably effective? Part of it is people are cynical and they think there's no sense in there going there. Part of it, people are busy. Part of it, they don't see the result happening. Something changing. So the other half, besides the little small amount that's usually regulatory, right, have to make a decision, I can make a decision. The other part is, if a body, a normally, formally constituted body, the Senate, the SA, the GPSA, the EA, or the UA itself, sends a resolution, and there can only be argument about the spirit versus the letter of the resolution, there better be a good reason why the administration doesn't respond to a resolution voted by a normally constituted body. Ad hoc groups, it's a little tougher. Ad hoc groups can form around a special interest. Sometimes that interest is broadly representative of the university. Sometimes it's not representative in a broad way at all. And that's a judgment call we can argue all day long, I think, about that one. But a normally constituted body, there should be a very good reason why the university doesn't respond, at least in the spirit of it. And I think the interaction that Elizabeth and I had before about the either fully online or broader availability of the complete report is a good example. I believe the provost has responded to the spirit, but you think not or not enough. And I'm going to bring that back and talk about it. Now, you ought to keep track of that. I don't mean you, Marty, but somebody, keep track of what the vetting average is. I keep track of the vetting average and things that are sent to me. And the vast, vast majority of things that are sent to me, I end up endorsing or slightly tweaking. And you want to see if you agree with that or not as a body.
Yeah.
And I think that Tommy's good offices or other offices could actually, and maybe should, I think the party was a good Tommy, but to keep track of how we do on those. If a trend surfaces where a smaller and smaller and smaller percentage of resolutions are being honored by the executive, then you have trouble. Either the executive is not listening, or there's a disconnect in expectations, or very unlikely but possible, the bodies are just operating with insufficient information and making bad decisions. But that ought to be a rebuttable assumption, that those things should be in general followed by the university. And one thing I think it would be great is if you kept track as individual assemblies, as well as the university assembly, on how we're doing, not just me, but the other people in the group. And my following of the ones that I'm most involved in tend to be the students generate much more than anybody else, and some from the faculty. I think we're way, way up in the percentages, but that's in my interpretation. And so I'd love to have the feedback. It doesn't have to be in some formalistic form. It could be that someone keeps track of quarterly and says, this quarter, 11 things were sent in totality, and you approved 10 of them, or 2 of them, or something like that. That would at least be a quantitative way of doing that. Now, there's many other things that don't come to a resolution, and that maybe never will come to a resolution, that have to do with the climate of the place, and whether people feel the climate is sufficiently welcoming to comment to even show up at meetings like this. And I don't know how to quantify that, except the number of times you ask me to come. I'll be glad to come more frequently if they can be short visits because of my schedule. But that other part, I don't know how to measure. I know how to measure the result of responses to the resolutions. I don't know exactly how to keep track of whether the climate is sufficiently conducive to people feeling, yeah, well, I want to go meet with this bozo or that bozo because something actually might change based on my proclivity. Does that seem reasonable?
Yes, very reasonable. And you're right that the resolution side of things is one that I've kept track of and been very interested in, and that's where I could say
say that when I my mood swings to the positive, it's because we're able to get things set up and you have responded. And so I'll have a question about that in the future, but not right now to you personally, having to do with an earlier resolution. But one of the things I had in mind, this is the nice thing about this body, I think, is the UA. It's different from the other assemblies, and it's different from the Senate, is that it's a multi-constituency representation. And one of the things we've had problems doing is staffing from different areas of the different constituents, particularly employees. And every time I've looked, and Leon's the one who's here now, so, but there are three empty spots there, and every time in the past 3 or 4 years I've tried to find out about that, employees have said, you know, we're just don't have the time. We don't get release time for this. We don't get any credit in our job for participating. It seems to me that we could, that's unlike Congress, and they get plenty of release time, you know, and they get paid for it as well. But we could stimulate, it would stimulate participation if we had some kind of encouragement from the senior administration to have supervisors and others allow release time and to have that be a part of, a respectable part of a CV or whatever that this person is participating actively.
Can you put your finger on that?
And there's a second side of that, and that is that when you say you have town meetings and people don't show and there's a matter of time and too busy, I think that same encouragement could come as you are doing perhaps an example in your statements about participation and transparency, participatory governance and so forth. If it were made clear that at this university for faculty, it's a significant contribution more than just, that's the last thing you write on your resume when you're trying to come up with a reappointment or a tenure, that they participate in the wholeness of the university.
If you can remind me with another thing, I'll talk to the provost about it. I'll talk to Opperman about it. I'll do that.
Right.
It's very important. I do try that on the staff side. The staff are in a pickle at this university right now. I'm really in a pickle. The staff workforce is down 7%. I'm sure we'll have more layoffs as a result of things we have to do.
Right.
And so there's fewer people doing a lot of work right now. And I think it's even harder. I wouldn't want to speak for the EA, but I mean, it must be even harder now to get away to do anything.
Right.
And so I do sometimes in writing, sometimes verbally, sometimes with a phone call or rarely a direct visit, try to encourage people, supervisors as you say, to do it. But it's flying in the face of what's actually happening here right now. But I agree with the concept.
I know. And I just want to carry one more step, and that is, I've been here for 37 years, probably not as long as Bill Joyce has been here, I've seen I love the concept of this as a different university. It's got something to offer that's different from the Ivies. It's out in the rural area. Unlike Dartmouth, it's not narrow. It's got everything here, but in this place. And we've seen a lot of people testifying to what's important about this place to them in regard to drilling. And we'll get a resolution about that of our body, which just was passed. But what they were saying was not just they don't want drilling. They're saying that there's something particular about this environment. It may be, isolated, but that actually central isolation means something to people who come here and want to stay here. And there's something also about the community that it creates amongst faculty members and between faculty and staff that is important. And that lends itself, and it has in the past, 20, 30 years ago, I felt at least, to a sense of community and a Cornell, proud Cornell and all that stuff, but, going forward. And so the words shared governance and transparency mean something particular about Cornell to me, not just that they're good administrative, postures. And so when I'm saying about release time, I know it's put in the context of people being pushed hard and the staff. I understand that. But there may be a different take on what our staff responsibilities that, you know, there might be a rough edge about one responsibility that should be fulfilled but isn't completely, so that that staff person can then have a fuller, you know, participation in another area. I don't mean that they don't do the job or something like that. I just mean that there's a different interpretation of it. It doesn't have to be the New York City interpretation of what they're supposed to do. It could be the difficult interpretation, the Cornell interpretation.
Well, and this is a great body to develop some words that would help us, because I visit the different assemblies individually, but this is a good place to talk about those things, because the better the understanding, I'm telling you something you don't know, but the better the understanding of each community on the campus, each sub-community, about what the other community is dealing with,
yeah,
the more chance that we can actually do these kind of things.
Right.
Because I will find a way to have employee assembly input to my decisions, one way or another, by going to EA, by having help with the town hall meetings, and so on and so forth. So I'm totally with you. You just have to help me figure out how to do that.
Right.
Thank you. So, Alice, if you have a quick one, because we are over our time.
Oh, yeah, actually, just ask two.
First, please.
Where do athletics fit in all of this? I didn't see a task force report on athletics.
There's a student academic services thing which has to do with all student life activities, including athletics.
So that's under student life?
Yep.
And the second is, we've talked about Cornell. Are we doing anything to interact with Ithaca College, looking at joint programs or ways that we can band together in terms of the Ithaca environment, look and see what IC is doing and look at integrating programs or doing something like that?
I don't know about academic programs, because I honestly would stick my nose in that. I really wouldn't. It has to be a faculty-led procedure if there was going to be some curricular sharing or whatever. In terms of the administrative world and in procurement, we're looking at all kinds of things where we could combine forces. For example, I think, I'm not sure this is correct, but actually you'll know right away. I think Gannett and CUDA Medical Center have some purchasing things in common, that sort of thing. And some of those things are happening on the H1N1. These are just examples. On H1N1, there was a lot of talk between IC, TC3, the medical center, and Cornell in terms of what would happen if everybody had as many cases as we did, or heaven forbid, there were more cases like Warren Short. And then finally, the recent safety things, crimes, which are just very discouraging. Well, one of them happened a block from my house, one block from my house, or from your house that I live in, I should say. We're beginning to talk not just with IC, but with other parts of the community. So could we be doing more? I'm sure we could. On the curricular side or research, I don't think you want the administration doing that. I mean, I think that's got to be something that either individual faculty groups or a department or a college or something like that would have to explore. But I'll share it back with you.
Andrew,
last
question.
Yeah.
We spoke before about our pass-fail ratio with resolutions. I was wondering, a lot of the times it's not pass-fail, it's, you know, we get comments back from you and we try and rework it and we try and pass it again and the process continues. I was wondering that, would you welcome individual representatives sending you resolutions asking you for comments prior to them presenting it to the assembly?
It's better, I think, for you all to discuss it. Otherwise, you're putting my power into the shared governance. I think if you look at, I know it's frustrating to have something sent back, but, you know, forgive me, welcome to the world. When you submit papers to a journal or something, you can just wait. Maybe it'll be different. Maybe everything you do will go the first time. Mine didn't work out that way. But I only look at the end game when I do my statistics, not how many times I torture you, but do I eventually go for it. And I think it's still a good batting average, but it is true that the complexities, for example, things that have to do with funding from a student activity fee and so on, the complexities, I always end up going back to Susan Murphy or somebody who knows what they're talking about the vagaries and intricacies of the different things. So, believe me, I'd be responsive if you thought of some other way of wanting to expedite the process and approach me with it, and I'll look at it very seriously. But I'm allergic to the idea of involving the president in the middle of a shared governance process. Because then what you could be doing, in effect, even though it's well-intentioned, what you could be doing is replacing my sort of proclivities with your own decision. You don't want to start dealing with what you think will get past the president. You want to push the president to do the thing that you want to do. I think. And it's up to you to decide if you like that or not. At least when I was on the other side of the table, that's how I was.
Maybe you've got time for just one more quick one?
Sure. Not from you, but if it's from the student.
just real quick.
And by the way, before you go, can you email me the question later so that we don't, I promise you I'll answer it. So they do have to go.
Yeah, this is just real quick. Just following up on what Marty was saying about the EA, yes, and filling the staff vacancies. We had a meeting today, in fact, and we discussed that. So it is something that we're very mindful of and that we're working on.
Sure, thanks.
That was it.
Go ahead and ask me.
No, I didn't have a question.
Oh, okay.
I had a quick question.
Okay. Did you have a quick one?
Just quick. I'm an A major, and a lot of people have been talking about, the Cal's plan to make AIM school versus, I think there was a task force report called Management Sciences. Mm-hmm. So how are you guys going to be dealing with, giving Cal the right to change its curriculum versus what the central administration is going to do with eventually combining a school? What's the probability? How is that going to work?
Probability, I wouldn't even guess that. Kent is taking input. He's getting a lot of input on this stuff. And he's having these open sessions. I forgot what you're calling it.
Yeah, he had one today on this very issue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's taking that back. He's, going back, putting his feet up, kind of blood pressure back down, all the good things you do when you're in this business. And he'll eventually, sit down and make a set of decisions. I wouldn't guess, not to be in any way evasive, I wouldn't guess on the probabilities of these things. The whole point of opening them up and having the open sessions that Tommy and Kent designed was not to have made a decision ahead of time and just sort of do it for show, was to take the input. And he's getting plenty of input. He got input from the faculty in the library, he got input on the management sciences thing. And, don't ask for something where you might get it. He really wanted it. He's getting it now. Mm-hmm. And we have sort of three masters or mistresses in terms of time on these things. One is that the campus is just nervous and wants to know what we're going to do, like you're asking the question. And I think that it's not as important to worry about how nervous people are as to make the right decision. But that's one. The second one is that we do have to come up with a budget for next year, for the year that starts in July. And you can't wait too long, because once that budget is set, the general parameters, it has to ripple through all the departments and colleges and units, and it takes a while to do that. And so there's great pressure on that, including setting tuition, deciding how much raises will be, and things like that. And that is over the next couple months that just has to be decided. And the third thing has to do with the time course for balancing the overall university budget. And as I hope you know, and Tommy will attest, since the very beginning of peeling the onion and recognizing how deep the hole was that we had to deal with, the board has been very supportive and malleable to my argument that we cannot balance a budget of a place like this by turning on a dime without harming the place. And so we have a multi-year plan. But eventually, the expenditure and revenue curves have to touch. And so I think that's the sort of order in which these things will force their way through. And you should keep our feet to the fire by just saying, it's been a while, what are you thinking about that kind of stuff? You can write directly to New York, Kent, or whatever.
Thank you.
Very much. See you guys. I'm going to follow up on this. See you.
There really are so many things that are already happening that we have no voice in. In my department, they're really alarmed because the libraries are selling off their collections, and we know that they sold off the collection in AAP that people were devastated by, and they closed the physical library. And then we found out that at Olin, they're selling off books for $1 a volume, and some of them, people in my department, no, it must be Susan Buckmore sent a memo to our department, they're selling books for $1 a volume, and one of the books she saw on the list that they were selling was something that she said changed her whole life. If she hadn't read that book, she never would have done what she did in her field, and our department's actually gotten up a resolution on this, but I don't because it just seems like such a terrible thing to do. Why do you think it's not happening? I mean,
it is happening that they have sold a whole bunch of books,
and nobody really got to weigh in on that.
And there's a faculty committee that is advises the library and has been involved in this. It's been very difficult, I may say, as somebody who ran the nominations elections committee, to get faculty in the humanities willing to serve on that committee and offer counsel and advice to the libraries.
I guess nobody anticipated that something like that would happen. We thought there was an annex where they kept books that weren't checked out much and so on, and all of a sudden they're being sold for money, and didn't find out after the fact.
I'd like to return to Randy's resolution, which is still sitting on the table, and ask if there is further discussion on this resolution. Yes.
Well, I think that because we have the ability, I guess, well, the legitimacy at least, to try and hold an open forum meeting, maybe that's what you want to do, and contact the person in charge of the committee.
I've talked to Ron a number of times, or various people on the committee, saying, you know, I would like to meet with you. All the people in introductory biology would like to meet with you. And
he's not with you, though.
Well, he met with the chairs of the departments in Cal, and I think he's got a presentation now that now he feels more comfortable about actually talking to him. So, I mean, another request might do it.
Seems to me, if I can editorialize again, that one of the things that's unfortunate about this procedure has been that it has been not transparent. And yes, if it had been transparent, there would have been arguments, pro, con, and every other way, because each faculty member is entitled to at least 5 different opinions. And that makes these things very messy, but on the other hand, I think it's very important to have it done in a more open way than it has been done. And so, I must confess, I find myself with a great deal of sympathy for this resolution, which simply says we would hope for greater openness.
I agree with that. I'm sympathetic too, because I think transparency is
okay.
I'm just wondering if this body consisting of employees and students and graduate students feels the same way. I mean, the biologists are obviously
prejudiced.
Well, I mean, I'll take the word of my peers and so forth on the committee, and I feel inclined to sponsor it, not to vote for it, if that's the case.
And I don't think Randy's resolution has a lot of negative stuff in it or anything. Asking for more information, and I think Ron Hoy and his committee are ready to get that information.
So this would not be a committee in which we would have to, as you know, members of this body, make any kind of judgment
based
on the information.
No,
it's actually just suggesting.
It's just suggesting
they
do university-wide airing of the issue.
That's right. Okay. Have a website. I mean, I've
I think the website idea is very good.
Good.
Yeah, but who's going to pay for it?
Open forum, but they can
could we pay for it?
Could the agency
of UA? If there were a website that was similar to the Campus Code website, could we take care of that? Could we take care of that?
Might be better to have that kind of discussion at committee meeting. We don't know what details would be involved.
Right. The executive committee could make a decision about that, I suppose.
Yes, yeah. I think depending on what happens. Is there further discussion on this motion?
I guess it's just a little unclear of exactly when I said what it's supposed to accomplish. There was an editorial in the Sun basically saying that this was a good thing. Okay. There have been at least 3 articles in the Sun already discussing biocurricular changes. Office of Undergraduate Biology has under its advising how these changes are going to affect new students and students who are already there, already here. What it does to incoming freshmen is something else. There's a bit of heuristic thing going on. What happens to someone who takes the non-bio major but pre-med course, which is now the 105, 106, or 10, whatever the number is, okay, what they may or may not do. But the decisions have already been made. There's absolutely nothing that's going to change the minds of these deans, okay, except up in depth if the task force report having to do with more support for undergraduate teaching coming to the vet school, if that doesn't come, then I have a feeling the vet school is going to pull out undergraduate. But regardless of that, I mean, yes, obviously there should have been more openness. Because nobody who taught undergraduate biology was involved in the decisions dealing with undergraduate biology. There's just nothing particularly new here.
Oh, wait a minute. Let's not judge any behavior on working papers.
No, but the point, I'm just unclear. Yes, I mean, it doesn't. I would vote yes for the register because, you know, the more information, the better. But in terms of what's already been out there, there's already all kinds of information out there. And I'm not sure what this will add.
It shows them that somebody's watching and somebody's critical.
And somebody cares, beyond
I think
that.
It's a good
that's what I said. I'm just saying functionally.
Yeah. Right. Well, this is saying the status quo as it stands is not acceptable. And perhaps that will make a difference in whatever the next thing is. First, they came for the biologist. I was a biologist.
Then they came for the government.
Is there further discussion? Are you ready for the question? Okay, all in favor of this resolution, please signify by raising your hand. Eleven in favor, all opposed.
Point of order, a question. To whom does this resolution get submitted?
I assume all our resolutions go to the president.
Not always. Is this addressed to the president? I didn't check.
I assume it is. And then if he approves it, it should go to the faculty and the college.
Okay, so that's the way that something would happen, is that the president would approve, and he would send it to, or he would send it back to us, and then we...
If he approves it, I'd be happy to send it to the...
You would initiate the process through which this committee, this website and so forth would take place, is that...
No, I'd send it to the college and to the committee.
My guess is the president will send it to the provost and say, you go for this. And one of the Pennsylvanians will
handle it.
Will handle it.
Right. Thank you.
I don't think we need to.
We need to worry about that.
I think that was going to be a sort of a supervisor. Well, perhaps. I take it that this was passed unanimously.
Yes.
Then my final question is there any other issue that will come before this meeting? There's nothing else on the agenda. And I suggest we, yes.
Right. I was going to say, I think the president is great. Will you send him a thank you?
Mm-hmm.
Or is that inappropriate?
I don't think that's inappropriate at all, if we feel that way.
I did thank him personally last night for his opening. But,
that's good. We could have a message of thanks for having him talking to us.
I would be happy to transmit a message of thanks to him.
That the body's general opinion.
Yes. Everybody in favor of saying thank you to the press?
Yes.
Anybody opposed saying thank you to the press?
Before we adjourn, I do have one other question. Maybe it's a matter of clarification having to do with what Leon brought up about the Sun article on the campus code of conduct. I guess John is Chetlin. He here to talk about that, but my impression is that the Sun got it wrong, that in fact this was not a change that we enacted, because it wasn't in the code to start with. It was an attempt to add something to the code that the president suggested was we had to revise the wording of. So I just wanted to pass that around the room.
Somebody
sure.
should write the Sun, because that really was garbled.
John should.
John, last time I spoke to him, had a response written up. He hadn't decided if he was going to submit it yet, but he did have a well-versed response.
Well, then we should urge him to do that, because I think the UA should come out with a black eye on it, that we've taken away this discrimination word. It never was there.
I don't know how John would feel about this, but would it be helpful if we offer to all sign
his letters in UX?
I think it would be great if we circulated and just sign on to it. I don't think he has to rely on all 12 of us who are here to have sent in their yes to go with it. Do you think? Or
I think it's a some personal thing, right? If you want to read John's letter and
no, I think well, it should come. It could best come from the U.S.
Yeah. I know we can all do stuff individually or personal, or whatever. But should it come from the U.A. or should it be individuals responding to it?
Well, if we're clarifying what we did as a body, that's an argument that it comes from us. If they got wrong what we did,
yeah. I think it's first and foremost John's decision. If he wants to send it as an individual, I think.
Why is that?
Yeah, it's just he brought it up.
But
yeah,
if they got something wrong that the UA did, then the UA needs to correct that, right? Otherwise, people do have a false impression of what happened.
I mean, I've been in many organizations where an individual writes a letter for the organization, and then the organization passes on it. I'm just trying to say that we should do this probably before the Sun stops publishing this semester.
It's just right. Mm-hmm. 2 days.
Oh, it's in 2 days. Doesn't have one next week? Oh, that's a shame. Well, then probably early next fall. Next
you don't think we could get it in Friday?
Sure.
Oh.
I don't know.
They're
already pre-backlogged. I know Mike wrote to you and he was hoping to get it in. They don't even know if they have space for
that. The corrections sometimes take time.
Okay, so I guess the thing is that there is time and that we could consider it at our first meeting, but John should be encouraged to bring it to the first meeting.
What we could also do is Doug has, when they do mess up on an article, they have a corrections section. So if we want to come up with our own response, just blatantly saying, like, this was wrong, like, here's why. It doesn't have to be lengthy, but John, therefore, can have his own article. Mm-hmm. We can encourage him to sign off to the university assembly, but that's another route we could pursue.
And if we could get that in quickly, while memories are still fresh.
I would think how the sun goes with corrections, they go about differently than they do with opinion articles or responses. That would probably go in sooner than.
But who reads corrections?
Yeah, if it was brief.
No, but I just read corrections.
We read the corrections in New York Times.
Which is
a good thing to do.
How do we? How should we proceed? Is somebody going to talk to John? You're going to talk to John. Maybe he wants to. I think that's the first step.
Okay.
How do we do that? So we go.
And you can send your response, whatever you find, it's useful around the body.
Sure.
We'll pick up on it.
Okay, I don't detect any other business, and I am prepared to entertain a motion to adjourn.
I move to adjourn 5 minutes.
Exactly. Nice work, everybody.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.